You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
This is a podcast where us two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. And we learn lots of lessons from these women about housewife work, housewife activities, raising children, dealing with neighbors, manipulation, murder, and so forth. We've learned lots of lessons from them about how to function if we ever are to move to suburbia, which could happen one day in the future. Who knows? But that's what we do here, and we're happy that you're tuning in. Today, we're recapping season 2, episode 13, There's Something About War. But before we dive into what I'm sure is going to be a thrilling episode with a title like that, we are going to talk a little bit about what's been going on this season so you're not totally lost if you're tuning in or if just in the past week your memory's been totally erased, which happens to me all the time. And then we talk about our own desperate deeds to get you warmed up for what's going to come your way. And then we recap it. Then we evaluate that episode that we just recapped on several different scales, including a fuck, marry, kill, a housewife of the week, and then we do a 5-apple rating. So that's what you're in for today. Mm-hmm. I hope that you're ready. Does that sound good, everyone? I don't know.
Be prepared, folks. Here we go.
So last episode, this season, we've had some ups and downs. We've been talking about this. If you've been tuning in every episode, we don't know how we feel. So I've gotten extremely high marks. So I've gotten really low. I started off thinking this was my favorite season ever. It is not. I was like, wow, this is great. Jordan claimed that it was going to be bad. And I was like, no way. It's starting off really strong. And then we hit some rock bottoms, I think.
Yep.
But last episode was kind of an average episode. There wasn't too much auxiliary work going on in terms of Paul and Zach, at the very least.
Yeah.
But we did have some Applewhite action with Bree. And we had some Gabby Carlos anger management nudity, revenge porn storyline.
Yeah. And vasectomies were discussed.
Yes, but not completed.
And we learned that Desperate Housewives clearly doesn't understand our healthcare system.
Yes, we learned a way to pick up a guy. If you want to pick up a doctor, there's one method that you could try, we've learned.
Which is acting like you have hella problems, but okay.
Sure. No, why don't we just start with Susan, because it was bananas. She goes to this doctor. Well, she goes on the worst date of her life, quote unquote, which wasn't like that bad. The guy had bad humor, but he was just nervous. Like, let's cut him some slack.
Yeah, I definitely think they were really, really harsh on him.
Yeah, they were like, this guy sucks.
And we kind of came to the conclusion that he's Susan. Like, he's a male Susan.
They bonk heads. That's how they even end up at the doctor. That's a total Susan move.
Well, and he, like, when they come in hot and make him seem like he's a literal piece of shit, he just has some really bad taste jokes. And I feel like Susan is on that level. Like, I don't know. Maybe not, like, the racist joke, but she's, like, clumsy, says dumb shit, lies. Like, she's all over the place, too. So maybe they honestly should have ended up together.
Yeah, I think this was her perfect match. Hope that we see him again, because this doctor is aloof and I don't like him. So she goes and she likes this doctor all of a sudden. I don't know why. I guess he checked her out too. Julie's like, the doctor called and he wants to see you for a follow-up. And I'm like, why is he even calling? Like, my doctors have never called me after, unless there was, like, an urgent problem. And this doesn't even seem to be her particular doctor. He's, like, an ER dude.
Yeah.
I don't get it. So they end up, she goes in, and she's like, I'm going to ask him out. And she, like, plans to do that. And he's, like, dodging everything. She's like, do you like coffee? He's like, no. And she's like, how about juice? And he's like, I think you need an MRI. Because she made up all these problems. And he's like, I don't see what the problem is. So then she goes to her MRI. There's nothing wrong with her. And then he does a house call and is like, I will do anything to like figure out why you're having these symptoms. And she's like, I actually just like made it up. And he's like, what the fuck's wrong with you? And then he walks out, but she's like, oh, but do you want to go on a date? And he's like, yeah, I guess. How about Friday? And you're like, what?
Like, it's so crazy. Like, it's just like Susan is like, you know, when the like people joke about like white men failing upwards. This is Susan being like a white man just failing upwards. Like, she makes a fool of herself repeatedly, but always gets what she wants.
I feel like it's pretty heinous to waste a doctor's time.
Like an ER doctor.
Yeah, like an emergency doctor or a surgeon. I don't know what he is, but he does like life-saving work.
Yeah.
And she like just wasted his time. And then she still gets to go on a date with him. It's like, why do you want to date her? She like basically committed fraud.
She's so neurotic. And now we know for a fact she's going to have hella hospital debts. So like, run, dude.
Yeah, so Susan, I'm interested to see what happens with Dr. Ron, I think his name is.
Yeah, Dr. Ron. Which is not a young guy's name. I like, why did they give him that name? Like, because part of his whole arc in this episode is that Susan feels like she's too old.
Yeah, a little. There was, like, mention of it.
Yeah.
And she apparently just threw all that caution to the wind.
I know.
Was like, whatever, I'm going to go balls deep and, like, trying to get him.
I guess, like, they added that scene because they realized there wasn't really enough for the episode. Like, I don't fucking know.
I don't know, but Dr. Ron sucks. Like, he doesn't have a personality. He's not interesting. There's no reason that she should want to date him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess there must have been super vibes or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So fuck Susan. I hate her storylines every single episode. That's what's up. So then Lynette stays home from work because the boys are sick and Tom is a baby when he's sick. So Lynette takes care of it. But then Carlos comes by and mentions something about like low sperm count if he were to get shingles. And, like, we completely ignore that Carlos asked Lynette to fuck last episode.
I know.
He's just like, he's part like, of that
conversation. Yeah, part of that conversation should have been Tom being like, hey, I heard you tried to, like, initiate an affair with my wife. Like, what's that about, bro? Like, what the fuck? Like, that should be talked about.
I for real thought that they were going to cover it and nothing happened. And
no.
He's just like, he's like, bye, guys, and, like, leaves. So
honestly, it would have been a lot more interesting than, like, where these episodes, like, their stories went. Like, I don't know. I feel like that would have been an awesome, like, episode to kind of continue that.
Yeah. So Lynette is basically like, what's up with that comment? And he's like, well, it can lower sperm count. And if in the future, like, something happens to one of us, I'd like to have options. And Lynette loses her shit. We had a big debate about it. You can listen. She demands him to get a vasectomy because it would ease her mind. And he's like, okay, I guess. And then he goes to the vasectomy appointment alone, I have to note. I didn't notice that until, like, later.
It was weird that she didn't go with him.
He comes home and she's like, you're not limping. It's like, I think he would need a ride home after his vasectomy.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
No, you totally do.
He's all, I don't know the logistics of the vasectomy, but she's like, well, oh, you didn't get it? And he's like, I like need you to ease my mind. Like, I feel unhappy. This is like, I need to have my dick shoot sperm out. I don't know. Like, he basically just says that it's a part of his manhood. He won't do it. And then he's unhappy and like mic drop goes upstairs.
We're gonna have to revisit our debate next season.
Oh, does this come up again?
Yes and no. I'm not gonna say anything. Because I was thinking about, like, our debate, and I realized that I am coming from a place, too, where I have more insight into the show. And so, like, because I've seen it all before.
Yeah.
And I think there, like, I was thinking about why I was so, like, annoyed with Tom, and it hit me.
Yeah, you're heated about it.
It hit me the other day. So, just so you know, we're going to revisit this, but I'm not going to tell you why or specifically when.
I'll debate it any day. I'll do whatever you want with the vasectomy, I guess. So that's what happens with them. Gabby and Carlos, like, she has some, like, naughty pictures on the internet, and she wants Carlos to beat up a guy for it. And
yeah.
He refuses because he found God hardcore, and then he eventually does it because he says, like, because he talks to the dude, he's like, can you just take the pictures down? And he's like, your wife's not hot anyway. Not internet pretty, he says.
Which is banana.
It's, whatever that means.
The beauty standards on the show are insane if that's the case.
And then Carlos throws him through a glass window like it's nothing.
Oh yeah.
And that's that.
Like they're a rag doll.
They was like a puppet. I was like, wow. Just limp body.
I do feel like this like storyline, it was cute. We kind of said that last episode, but like, I don't know. It just kind of felt like they have no direction for these two characters right now. And this felt a little like filler to me. I just feel like Bree's the only one with like a story arc happening
in this episode, in the last episode.
It just feels like everyone's kind of disjointed. Like Gabby and Carlos had the Sister Mary storyline for like two episodes, and then they just kind of like fixed, you know, shoved that off and did this for some reason. And like even Lynette and Tom's storyline kind of came out of left field, and it was like kind of resolved at the end, but not really. And then like Susan's story arc is what? She's dating a hot young doctor?
Susan's just trying to date, I guess, yeah.
I don't know. It just feels very like the momentum of the season is like at a halt.
A bit. I mean, yeah, Bree, we could talk. She has a drinking problem, which is on a lot of shows lately. We've been watching it just like that. The Sex of the City reboot. Mm-hmm. I've been begging Jordan to watch, but Miranda has a drinking problem.
Yeah.
I watched another show where somebody has a drinking problem. Oh, I'm watching a show called Single Drunk Female, which is all about a girl with a drinking problem.
Okay. That is, I feel like, a solid direction to go, I guess. Throw your character into an alcoholism, like, plot line.
We've noticed. I think I said something about, like, a wine glass seems to be Bree's accessory these days.
Mm-hmm.
And it really fucking is, so.
But I feel like that's what, like, is making this season, because we're at the midway point now, so, like, I think it's kind of fair to evaluate, I guess, the first half, but like that is set up, like they slowly started having her drink wine and like it slowly became a thing, and it was like
ramped up.
Yeah, but it's like they did it over the course of a few episodes where it wasn't the focus, and then all of a sudden it's being talked about and you're like, oh yeah, she was kind of like drinking every time like any bad conversation ends with her pouring wine. And so you start to like, I don't know, that to me is good storytelling. So it's like these other stories are just like so poor in comparison.
They gotta catch up to Bree. They gotta catch up, because she goes out to lunch with that weird cop that was adamant that she killed her husband, that we met in the morgue with that useless extra one time.
Yeah.
And she goes out to lunch with him because her friends convince her to get the dish on the Applewhites, because they refer to the Applewhites as a sickness in the beginning, which was mildly racist.
Yeah.
They're suspicious of the Applewhites. They're like, Bree, go to lunch with that dude. She goes to lunch with him and is like pounding drinks because he thought it was a date, like threw her off. And she's like, I'm going to get trashed. So he refuses to give her information because he's like, I don't know, like that's not like grounds to go. Like, just because you think they're weird, it's not grounds to go do this. She gets too drunk and drives home, and he's like, don't drive. Like, before they leave, he's like, you had four drinks. Like, what are you doing? And then she drives, and he pulls her over because he's pissed that she's such a bitch. Because she was like, oh, my God, you're trying to get me to go home with you. Like, she was being a bitch.
Yeah.
When he pulls her over, he arrests her because she's being unruly yet again. And then when she gets out, she walks her sorry ass home, and Betty rolls up and is being too friendly. And she's also just trying to be nice, I thought. She's like, I notice you've been drinking a lot. Like, Bree admits that she drank too much and she had a DUI. And Betty's like, I mean, it makes sense. Like, your husband died. Like,
I know. I thought she was really, like, Bree's turn on her made no sense to me.
Oh, my God. Bree's, it was like how she did with that Lila girl. It's like, oh, my God, like, you think she's going to be nice, but instead she's like a complete bitch.
Yeah.
And she was like, what do you know? Like, you seem to have a lot of secrets. Like, everybody talks. Like, she just went off. And then Betty's like, shut the fuck up. I'm going to move.
Yeah.
And calls Edie. And calls Edie and is like, I need to list my house.
Yeah. She's like, fuck this.
Then Bree at the end gets a message from the cop dude. And he's like, I did some digging on that private eye that died. Like, they end up finding out that guy that we know nothing about is a private eye from Chicago, dun dun dun, which is where Betty is from. And like, so the pieces of the mystery are slowly being pieced together.
It's just so fucking jarring. Like, I just, like, that character, that PI, was such a weird part of, I don't know, like, I just
I still don't know his name.
Like, the thing is, too, like, with the first season, obviously there were peripheral characters like that that were part of, like, the mystery only, but they all were introduced via main characters, so it made sense. Like, Martha Huber and then her sister Felicia, and then, like, Mike coming in, and then, but he's being hired by this dad to, like, by the old guy to, like, you know, find this girl, and it's, like, I don't know. It just felt like all of those had time to kind of gestate. And so it didn't feel like we were getting bombarded with, like, random plot twists that had... convoluted. It's just so convoluted, I guess, at this point. Like, yeah. It just didn't feel... It's so uninteresting.
Yeah, Betty and Matt at the beginning of the episode, besides seeing her pull up and help Bree out before Bree annihilates her, they talk about how they're going to just, like, play it cool. They're going to be super friendly to everybody. And that's, like, their method before Bree pops off. And mm-hmm. Betty's like, I'm going to sell the house. So, yeah, that's what was going on last time. No idea what's up with Paul and Zach, I guess.
They really just, like, half-assed that whole.
They led us on with the bowling date. Like, with the Julie-Zach kiss. Like, where they at?
I don't know. Like, this whole aftermath of season one, they really just did not, I guess, they wanted to distance themselves. I don't know. It's so weird to me that they, like, I don't know.
I can say I love the set of Wisteria Lane. Like, it feels like home. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is comforting.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what's going on with these crazy ladies, like,
it's, yeah, no.
So that's where we left off. Like I said today, we're moving on to the next episode. We go linearly here. So season 2, episode 13, There's Something About War. You can watch that on Hulu or the Amazon Prime. And we have our own desperate deeds now. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, I got, well, no. I need to think of a desperate deed. Ah, my brain.
Okay, well, don't worry. I'll give you guys one because it was horrifying to me. It was horrifying.
All right, let's hear it.
So last week, I was just chilling on my couch watching Law & Order SVU because it's the most disturbing show, I think, but I find it very comforting. just the early seasons, but that's my usual. Like, I just flip that on. I can kind of, because what it is about that show, this is not anything to do with my desperate deed, but I'll just tell you guys. You can, like, be invested in it. Like, there are some storylines that are so crazy that you're like, what the fuck is going to happen? And then there's some that you can just kind of mindlessly, like, tune out. It's, mm-hmm. like, your choice. I have a choice with that show. And I feel like it's comforting to know that it always is completed at the end. The story is complete. But I'm sitting there, and I'm watching with my cat. And I hear a knock at my window. And I'm like, I literally freeze. All my lights are on and it's dark out. It's night. It's like 9 p.m. So I assume whoever is knocking at my window can see in here. I'm like laying on my couch so you can't see me. I think my leg was draped over. So I was like, holy shit. I think it's like a homeless person or something, some creepy person. There was a person murdered down the street from me like a week ago in an interior design store, like middle of the day, like random. So I'm like very panicked by this knock at my window. And so I call my boyfriend and I'm like, somebody just knocked on my window and I don't know, like, what do I do? And he's like, go into your room, like, turn off all the lights. So I do that and I'm like sitting in my room with, like, in the dark now on the phone. And I'm like, I don't, like, why would somebody be knocking my window? And he's like, is there somebody? Like, he was too far away. So he's like, can somebody come by and, like, check what's going on? And I do have a friend down the street, but I figured out the mystery before I needed somebody to come by. Then another knock comes on the window and I'm like, fuck. And my windows are just like right out on the street. So this is very frightening to me. And my boyfriend hears, he's like, oh my God, like, what the fuck's going on? And I'm like, I don't know, but I don't want to go out there. And I like peeked around and I did see somebody kind of waving from the window happily. and immediately in my head, I'm like, fuck. If we recall from a previous episode, one of my desperate deeds was that my ex came by and left a note and he took a picture of my window with a note that he didn't even leave there. This was back in September or so. And I'm like, is he doing this again? But like, I'm home now because last time I was luckily out of town. This time I was home. And so I literally sat in my room with my cat on the phone for like 45 minutes. I did not want to go out there. I did not want to address the situation. I don't care what he wanted to say, and I didn't want to know. But I had to find out anyway because he left me another letter. Along with flowers and cookies that he clearly did not make. In a Tupperware that I will not return and, to be honest, threw in the trash. Tupperware and all. I didn't keep the Tupperware. I thought it was bad energy.
It is bad. Yeah, it might be poisoned, honestly. Who knows? This guy's a wild card. Yes,
it said chocolate chip cookies with walnuts. And I said, what if I was allergic to walnuts? And my boyfriend was like, wouldn't he know you dated him? And I said, no, that's his personality. He wouldn't know. And the most desperate part about this is the letter was, like, rather unmoving, I would say. It was very short. It said, like, textbook things that you – it's like somebody Googled, like, how to win your bitch back. Like, how to win your girl.
It was, like cheesy, but not in a good way.
It's like, get bae back. It was like, if you Google that.
He's, like, reading instructions on his phone as he's doing it.
It was, like, templated, like, insert word here, insert adjective here. It was, like, a Mad Lib of, like, a note. But on the back, there was the most personalized thing ever. And it was really offensive because I don't want to be associated with Travis Scott or the song Sicko Mode unless it's like on New Year's Eve with Jordan. But he said, whenever I hear Travis Scott Sicko Mode, like, I think of you. And I was like, this is hurtful at this point. But yeah, it was a little bit desperate to come to my window, leave cookies that you didn't make, flowers that he probably stole, a note that he mad-libbed and Googled, and knock on my window unwarranted when a woman was murdered down the street.
Yeah.
So it was all a bit desperate.
No, that's like peak desperation right there.
A part of me, I'm like, I respect the game, but like it's January 2022. This is long gone and it's too little too late.
Some like fuck ups people just don't bounce back from, and he needs to get that in his head.
Yeah, as I've said once before, what he did was unforgivable. So just like, don't knock on somebody's window. That's weird.
Yeah, don't scare people.
I blocked any way that he could contact me, so I guess this is it. Like, I'll update you guys when he does smoke signals next, but...
Okay, but if like you block someone on everything, like, that obviously means you don't ever want to talk to them. So showing up at their house is clearly not a good, like, it's not going to fix anything. No, hell no.
Yes. So flattering, maybe. Do I respect the effort? Not really, because the cookies he didn't even make. Like, if he had made the cookies, maybe. No, overall, I have to, like, mark it down as desperate. So... that's my desperate deed.
Mine's not as exciting, but so when I was in college, the first guy like I dated, I was like so into, and he broke up with me. And it was like just like a comedically stupid breakup. Happened on April Fool's Day. No one believed me when I told them, so I had to like convince people.
No, this is for real.
Yeah, like it was like we woke up April Fool's Day and he just like told me it wasn't working. Like, I'm in his bed still. And I was like, okay. And then I left, and I, like, realized he had one of my guitars. Like, I'd left it at his house. So I, like, knocked on the door and asked for it back. He made me, like, stand outside in the rain while he went and got it. Like, just, like, cold
That's
as fuck.
That's a Pacific Northwest breakup for you. Yeah. Literally standing out in the rain.
So he just so, such a shitty breakup. And so... I was, like, pretty depressed for a while, and, like, I knew where he worked, and it was one of my favorite places, like, restaurants in town, so I was, like, so bummed. I was, like, fuck, I can never go there again. Fast forward, like, 2 years, and I had a friend visiting me, and I was, like, fuck, that place is really cool. It's been 2 years. He probably doesn't work there anymore. You know, fingers crossed.
I literally would have forgotten he worked there, probably. I would have assumed he didn't work there. Yeah. I'm, like, whatever, that's... water under the bridge.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, it had been a long time. Plus, like, I'd been in Florida during that chunk. So it's like, I would have gone sooner if I guess I hadn't had that gap that took me away. But I went and I brought my friend and we were sitting at a table. And then all of a sudden, like, I heard this crash of, like, dishes. And I didn't think anything of it at the time. It's a restaurant. It's loud. Like, whatever. And then, like, our server came to us and he was, like, kind of awkward. And I was like, this, like, again, didn't think too much of it. I was like, me and my friend are cute. Maybe he's just nervous. But
I like it. I like the confidence there. Maybe we're just too hot for him.
Yeah. So fast forward again, like a few months, and I ran into this guy. And after that, like, we talked a little bit, and he was like, yeah, you came to the restaurant one time. So I guess he was still working there. And he was like, yeah, one of my buddies was like, look at those two cute girls at the table. And he's like, and I saw it was you. And he's like, and I just like ducked under the table as fast as I could before you'd see me. And I knocked a fuck ton of dishes everywhere. And I was like, what the fuck?
He was like desperate. I don't understand. It had been 2 years.
I mean, to be fair, our breakup, like, he was brutal, and I'm pretty sure he cheated. It was just, like, he was a piece of shit. He knew it, and I think he was, like, scared I was going to confront him or some shit. I don't know, but that was that was not my desperate moment, but his desperate ass. That's
so weird and desperate. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Like, wow.
Yeah, so he straight up broke a bunch of his work property just so I wouldn't notice him. But I guess, like, he told that server that he used to date me, and so that's why the server was, like, all awkward when he came out to the table, because all that had just happened. Men are, like, just as embarrassing as women are. Like, they're, I don't know, so why.
Embarrassed. They are embarrassing. If you learn one thing from our Desperate Deeds today, they're just as embarrassing as
I
we know. Are.
I was, like, 2 years, I'm like, what the, like, get over it. First of all.
A lot happens in 2 years.
Also, yeah, like, what do you think I did? Like, just had all this pent-up anger and I was going to let loose on you now?
Like, you, yes, they always think that. They
think they're,
like,
so important.
I think they're so important. Yes, I love that. It was April Fool's, though. That's hilarious to me.
That was brutal. I just remember calling my mom and telling her, and she thought I was kidding. I was like, I'm not. And then I realized what was happening.
I can see your mom. So sweet. No. Yeah. Jordy, no.
Yeah. All my friends, same thing. They were like, no, no. And I'm like, no, this is real. They're like, April Fool's. I'm like, no, this is my life. I guess my life is a joke. That's what this is telling me, is I am the April Fool. But. But.
Like a bad movie.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'll never forget. I was actually very satisfied. It did feel good that he was, like, that fucking, like, desperate to, like, avoid
also,
me.
Also, yeah, I bet he's, like, still working there. Who the fuck knows? Like,
yeah, I don't fucking know. But.
Hometown shit.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you guys are warmed up. I feel like we'd really hit it out of the park with our desperate deeds today.
I agree.
We're gonna go ahead and watch this episode. Like I said, season 2, episode 13, There's Something About a War. After that, we'll be back with our recap. But make sure to watch safely and buckle up.
Buckle up.
Susan worries about Dr. Ron doing her surgery. When a position opens up at Lynette's firm, Tom thinks he's the guy for the job. Bree and Betty have to manage their teenager's relationship. The return of Sister Mary Bernard drives Gabby to her wit's end.
Okay, so somebody gets slapped this episode, yet again. Mm-hmm. We love to see somebody slapped in the face.
I love a good slap. It's like every soap opera needs this.
Yes. We don't see Andrew, but we get reacquainted with Danielle.
The forgotten child.
Yeah, we're missing a couple characters, but I think it was heavy enough in the Applewhites that they made up for it. Mm-hmm. We're getting more. We're getting what we've always wanted from them, maybe.
Yeah.
In an unexpected way, but it's here. And we see a lot of war happening under all these roofs. I could just take it from the top.
Yeah, dive right in.
Edie. We don't see her again after this, but we start with Edie. We discussed this. They don't know what to do with Edie, you guys. They're confused. But we're happy she's a part of the gang.
Mm-hmm.
If there was something that Edie understood, it was the nature of war, is what Mary Alice Young says. I love that. I'm like, wow, Edie's great. 2 failed marriages and rocky romances. And I'm like, not really selling her, but all right.
I know.
She learned love was a battlefield. The way to survive was by total surrender. And we see that, like, Carl is the shittiest boyfriend ever, maybe.
Oh, he's literally the worst.
He was such a dick to her.
Yeah, no, he's a piece of shit.
She's like, why don't we go to Rome? And Carl's like, Vegas is cheaper. And he says it just like that. Yeah. He like barks it at her. And then he's throwing his underwear on the floor. She's like, can you throw it in the hamper? And he's like, can you do it? Gross. And then she's like, I'm kind of craving Chinese. And he says, I'm so over rice. Let's do pizza.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, wow, this is so shit.
Yeah, no, he's mean. He's just like mean. I don't know.
Yeah. I was like, wow, Edie, I didn't know it was like this on the inside. but the day comes to stand and fight. She is like watching TV and Carl changes it to sports. And she's like, I was watching this movie. And it was like, I gotta tell you, it's a black and white movie. It look like, I don't know what her taste is. It just seemed bizarre to me. It was like a 1930s, like silent film.
It was weird. I was like, I actually noticed that too. I was like, what a strange choice to have her be like an old lady in a way, watching like her old movie, watching her pictures.
Yeah, it was not interesting. And Carl changes his voice and she's like, and she's like, I was watching that, and he doesn't care. He ignores her like a mm-hmm. true dickhole.
Yeah.
And she gets up and she's like, I got stuff to do anyways. And she had a battle plan all her own. She goes downstairs in some lingerie and I'm like, holy shit. And she's like, Carl, like, come upstairs. And he's like so into this whole thing, and she ties him up to the bed, and he's like, you're so bad. And she's like, you have no idea. And she's like, let me go get the whipped cream. And she was eating pie when she was watching her old picture, which also added to her old lady demeanor.
And like someone like Edie would ever eat pie too. Like, no.
I'm like, what is it, a Marie Callender like frozen one? I don't get it. So she grabs the whipped cream and like finishes her pie, and she basically enjoyed her pie. My last line is unreadable of my notes. So, and then we have our little intro, and we never revisit Carl and Edie, but now I feel like I know too much about their relationship and I don't like it. Next thing we know, we come in and we open on the Applewhites, and Mary Alice Young continues. She's like, the guest bedroom at the Applewhites was banging. Apparently it was the tits. From the window, one could see Mike's house to the old Huber place on the other end. And for the room's newest guest, the room was about to change, though. And they cover up those nice windows that can see the whole street. So Betty comes home and is like, why the hell is Caleb out? Because I guess he's just chilling. And I like feel like they treat him like an animal, and worse than an animal. Why is Caleb out? And Matt is like, go to your room, Caleb. And Betty's like, what? We have the sex dungeon for him. Why are you using the word room? and Matt is kind of stupid. And he's like, people can't see him. I covered the windows. And I'm like, that's also very sad. Like, I guess I'd rather have a covered window than brick walls and chains in a dungeon. But yeah, I'd rather have neither of those choices in just a normal life. So Betty is like, stop. He won't remember to keep quiet. Like, we can't move him upstairs. And then Matt is adamant that they can protect him without treating him like an animal. Mm-hmm. Betty thinks she's keeping him safe from the Fosters, from the police, and himself. But Matt says he is not going to go back downstairs. Betty is like, don't talk to me that way. Or no, she said, when do you talk to me like that? And Matt is like, since I share the risk. And then there's a beat. So we are ramping up.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, it's definitely getting a little more interesting. I do have a question, though. Did they, like, change their names when they moved to Wisteria Lane? Has that been...
I mean, do you know? Is that a spoiler? Like, I don't know if they changed their names.
I don't know. That's why I don't remember. If they did, I don't remember.
I feel like they didn't. I feel like they just got far the fuck away from Chicago.
So why are they, like, hiding him?
I don't know.
Because if no one there knows or even would start to suspect it, like, if anything, they're just making themselves more of a target.
I feel like they must have changed their names. I have to tell you guys, whenever I write my notes, the Applewhites is, like, far too long to write every time. I hate that name now that I've written it so many times. The Applewhites, it's so long. It's a stupid name.
It's really long, and it's, like, there's Betty White, and like Betty Applewhite. I'm like, well, real creative folks, but
I don't know if they've changed their names. I'm glad we're getting to see more of Caleb, but we'll see as the storyline goes on. We get to see a lot more of Caleb and a lot more of Matt, and we go into a crossover of Bree and Betty finally, fully. Yeah. That's the whole storyline this time. Yeah, I don't know if they changed their names.
I'm just like, what's the motivation to hide him, I guess? They never really make that super clear. She does say at one point, like, I don't know. I guess the implication is that he might run away or something, I guess. But, like, I'm just trying to figure out why they chained him.
I don't know. Well, speaking of the Applewhites, like we said, Bree and the Applewhites have a very intertwined storyline. Mm-hmm. So we can cover Bree first. Bree always
sounds like a plan.
She always has a killer storyline coming our way. She always has like interesting things happening to her.
She's definitely had the most like consistent story arc this season for sure. Like they seem to always know what they want to do with her character, unlike all of the other ones. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually can't think of many storylines that were like filler for Bree out of everything we've watched. It's usually pretty in depth.
Mm-hmm. Because like the first half of the season was the George plot, and now it's like the aftermath of that, and it all makes sense to me, like so far.
Yeah, it's looking good. It passes the smell test. Mm-hmm. So basically, Bree comes home. And Danielle is sexing Matt in her room is what I wrote. Lots of question marks. They're getting it on, like, I think he's shirtless. Like, she's like, get dressed. Yeah. And because Bree knocks on the door, and Danielle's, like, scrambling. We've all been there. Where your parent walks in and you're, like, on opposite ends of the couch. Like, we were not even thinking about touching each other. Yeah. Like, not at all.
You're like, we're trying to avoid cooties over here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, the TV isn't even on. Like, there's nothing. You guys are just sitting on opposite ends of the couch. She's scrambling. And she's like, Mom, I'm doing homework. And Bree's like, that's weird because I have your backpack. And Danielle opens the door and tells the fattest lie about doing research. She's like, I was just doing research. I got really into it. And I can't remember researching much in high school. I know that I did, but it wasn't like college research. Mm-mm. And yeah, so Danielle tells that fat lie. Bree barges in like every good mom does when they sense that something is wrong. Did your mom ever do that where she just welcomed herself into your room?
My parents were pretty good about like knocking, because I feel like they were just like, we don't want to see anything like either type of thing.
Yeah.
They're like, we'll know if something was up, but we're going to at least give you time to like cover yourself.
That's good of them. I definitely had the mom that like welcomed herself in just, oh, this door is open. Why don't I just walk in here? She did that to my dad all the time once they were divorced. Like when she would come over to his house, she would literally just be like, hey, I'm here to like pick up whatever and like walk into his like entryway in his living room. And I'm like, this is like weird. You don't live here.
Yeah.
But whatever. So Bree is like, oh, let me do that laundry. Like it needs to get done. And Danielle's like, no. And then Bree welcomes herself to cleaning up the room. And she's like, there's shit under the bed. And Bree goes to grab it and finds Matt's black hand there. And I only say that because the verbatim quote she asked Danielle is, Danielle, question, is there a black man hiding under your bed?
And she, like, the delivery of that line was pretty amazing.
Yeah, Bree does see color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does.
So the next thing that happened is Bree marches them together down to Mrs. Betty Applewhite, who's out in her lawn doing who knows what. And she says, I just want to know that I found your son in my daughter's room. And before, like, Bree even gets out that line, Betty just fucking slaps Matt across the face so hard and so loud that it takes Bree's breath away. Like, even Bree is shocked. And she spanked little boys. She spanked Lynette's little boys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she has a hard backhand, but she's like, OMG. And Danielle is like, stop, I love him. No. And Betty apologizes for her son's behavior, and she's like, don't worry, I'm selling this house, so if you'll excuse me, we'll be gone before you know it.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem to give a fuck.
Mm-mm.
Cut to Bree finding Danielle bawling her little eyes out in her super pink room. I couldn't help but notice that Danielle's room was horrifying. Like, it was...
Oh, no, it was just, like, disturbing.
It was like a pink Care Bear, like, threw up on it. It was a lot.
This was, like, peak, like, set designer that just, like, oh, teenage girl, pink. Like, I don't know. Get a little more perspective in there.
Teenage princess fantasy.
Like. Yeah.
So Bree tries to comfort her, and Danielle is like, get the fuck away. And Bree's like, I'm sorry that he got slapped. Like, it really wasn't my fault.
She's like, I did not expect that to happen. Like, what?
I know. Like, I was shocked you saw my face. Like, we didn't discuss it before. She's like, couldn't have predicted how Betty would react. And Danielle's adamant that she knew what she was doing. And she wanted this to blow up in Danielle's face, and Bree is like, what the, like, why would I want that? And Danielle says, like, the peak angsty teenage girl lines that are going to follow. She says, you're jealous of that my life is getting started and yours is over, you old hag, basically.
She does, like, a brutal takedown of her mother. I was like, oh.
She goes, dad is dead. You drove your boyfriend to suicide. You're getting older and soon you'll be dried up and bitter and no man will want to ever touch you ever again. And now you're determined to ruin my life, so I have to keep you company while you turn into an old fossil. And she turns away and continues bawling. So
she's a fucking psychopath.
Like, wow, that writer really channeled some serious...
Yeah, some mommy issues in there.
Some really specific energy.
Yeah.
And Bree's like, all I ever wanted you for you was to be happy. You know, sorry about that. And then it doesn't end. Danielle says, don't just want it, make it happen. I'm like, okay, maybe you should have gone to New York to be a model. You're a nightmare.
Yeah, she's a fucking bitch. She's such a
horrible
bitch.
Yeah, Brie is like, I don't feel like cooking. I'm going to order some pizza. And I guess their fight is over because Danielle's like, Canadian bacon, please. And Brie's like, all right, I'm about to do that. So I'm going to cut to the Applewhites because, like I said, they're a bit intertwined.
Yeah. Here.
And the next time we see Bree, she's getting ready for a poker night. And things don't go the way she plans.
No. So,
after Matt gets slapped, he comes home and is sulking. And Caleb is at the table.
Yeah.
And he says, Matt's mad that you hit him to Betty. And she's like, I feel bad about that, but when I consider the risks, it's a shame that he can't see that girl. She's so pretty, Caleb says. And we'll see him say this again and again. I think he's said it once before, maybe, but I'm getting the vibe that he thinks, like, every girl is pretty because he's saying it about Danielle.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. And Betty, like, freaks out about this. She's like, what did you say about Danielle? And Betty's about to, like, slap him, too. And I'm like, dang, Betty can't help herself. She says, you know I don't want you thinking things like that. And I'm like, okay, he seems to have some issues. He says he's sorry. And she's like, go upstairs and read those comics and, like, shut the fuck up. And then Betty makes a threat. She says, if I ever see you looking at that girl, I'll hit you twice as hard as your brother. So she'll basically murder him.
Yeah. I was like, Jesus.
She's frightening.
Mm-hmm.
So then we see Caleb is ripping the paper down from his windows. So that was a terrible fucking plan that they had. They're like, oh, this paper is going to work really well. But he rips it down, and he sees Bree coming down the street, marching down the street, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yo, Betty, what's up? I want to talk about what happened with the kids. And Betty's like, shut up, I'm moving. Like, don't you get it? And she's like, I'm scared. But Bree's like, I'm scared if we keep them apart, they're going to, try to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know how teenagers can be. Like, she might get pregnant. She doesn't say that, but basically.
Yeah.
And Betty's like, if you control yours, I'll control mine. Once again, referring to her children like they're animals.
Mm-hmm.
Bree's like, how about we just chaperone? And Betty is like, I don't really fucking think so. And then Bree sees Caleb in the window and, like, freaks out. And she's like, I actually have some muffins in the oven. Gotta go.
Yeah.
GTG. Yeah. And then Bree looks through every newspaper ever that she keeps in a back shed, I guess.
Like a hoarder, like with all her newspapers.
Did you notice that there's a shed of just like newspapers?
Yeah, it was weird. Super weird.
And then Danielle sees her going, like Bree goes to the phone and Danielle sees her and hears Bree telling all the girls. She's like, at poker, I'm going to tell you the shit about Betty Applewhite I just discovered. And it's about the man that they arrested, a.k.a. Caleb. He's, like, at the Applewhite household.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him in the window. They're hiding him. Basically, Danielle hears this and then, like, goes to Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in the middle of town. There's this weird park they keep meeting in that just seems to be in the middle of, like, the whole...
It's
like,
in the middle of the neighborhood.
Yeah, so like, everybody can see that.
Yeah, it's like smack in the middle. It's like this little like island thing in the middle of the neighborhood. It's weird.
Yeah, it's super weird. So basically, Matt's like, got your note. What's going on? And Danielle just comes out and says it. She's like, are you hiding someone in your house? Because that's kind of hot. She seems turned on by it. Yeah. And Matt's like, IDK, what? And she's like, my mom saw someone in your second story window. And my mom thinks it's the dude from the newspaper. And Matt also has no filter. And he's like, damn it, Caleb. And just like says his name.
And yeah, I'm and like, he's like, we're going to have to leave tonight. Like he starts like panicking and like spilling his guts. I'm like, oh my God.
Could have like hit it better. Yeah, he freaks out. And she's like, what's going on? And he's like, I would love to tell you, but I can't. And this is the most traumatic. Like, you guys can chill.
Mm-hmm.
And Danielle is trying to get him to trust her. I could help you. And she says, my family has secrets too. And she's about to tell the deepest, darkest secret. Like, you just know intrinsically, like, things that you don't fucking tell people.
Yeah.
Like, you know that there's things where you're like, fuck, I never want anybody to know about that. Like, mm-hmm. it's probably the worst thing I've ever done. Like, you know, you have to just know.
Mm-hmm.
And Danielle doesn't seem to have any fucking common sense. And she's like, last year my brother did something really bad and my parents covered it up. And he would go to jail if anybody found out. So there's my secret. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like... So she's like, you don't have to worry about me judging you. I'll keep all your secrets. And Matt like has a little smirk because he goes home and tells his mama. He goes home and tells his little mama.
Yeah, no, they're okay. Also, though, like Danielle's so stupid. Like she and Matt have not been dating that long.
No, they've been dating for like 3 weeks.
Pathetic. Maybe. She's she's such an idiot.
Wouldn't even say that they're dating.
Yeah.
Like, what do? They've been hiding. They've been sneaking around. Like. Mm-hmm. It's so annoying to me. That's we cut to the Applewhites because next thing we see, Bree is getting ready for her little poker night and Betty drops by and she's like, can we talk? And Bree's like, no, I have poker. And Betty just like lays it all out there. She's like, I know about like your son. I know that you saw my son, Caleb. He didn't harm Gabby. My son's slow. He makes mistakes. Bree's like, I don't really care. The police are looking for him. And Betty continues. She's like, he escaped from the place we sent him. You know, it's funny the lengths women will go to save their children. It's like super crazy. And she's like, women like you and me. And
the way she said this was so good. I was like, ooh, I like this.
Yeah. Shout out to that actress.
Yeah. Like,
it was prime delivery. But Bree fucking knows that she's frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And Betty's like, if you fucking speak of this, I'm going to tell Carlos. I'm going to tell Gabby. I'm going to tell the whole fucking town. And like you're gonna wish you were dead.
And Bree's face drops and she's so like scared like in her eyes, and I just sat there and I'm like, okay, but like you are literally threatening to kind of do the same shit. And your son, like, you don't even know the full story with Caleb, and Andrew's not slow. Like, your son just like maliciously fucking killed someone and didn't even does she not even remember that Andrew didn't even care?
I know. Oh, my God. Andrew, like, cried like a baby, and then he, like, didn't give a fuck.
He didn't care. So I'm like, Bree, like, you're such a fucking hypocrite. Like, the way that she was just like, well, the police are looking for you. I'm like, interesting take. I feel like they're probably still looking for the person that ran over Juanita Solis.
I know. Yeah, it's interesting Bree getting a taste of her own medicine because mm-hmm. she, like, pretends to be bad as fuck. And then, like, when it hits her, she's like, I can't believe it.
Yeah,
and I'm
she's
like, you're such a bitch.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I have mad respect for her, but she could be a little bit cooler sometimes. So Then the ladies come over and Betty is like, don't keep them waiting. And then Edie is just like a loudmouth and she's like, what's up with the Appleway? It's like, you called. And Bree's like, oh, I guess I got a little excited. And like Betty's chilling there.
Mm-hmm. And she walks out with like the food.
Yeah, she's like, I'll be playing poker with you bitches tonight. And their faces drop too. They're like, ew.
They're like, what the fuck's happening?
They're like, you're not fun.
Yeah.
So that's what's up with Bree and the Applewhites. I thought it was nice to have the Applewhites like a little bit included more so. I think we waited too long for it where I don't care anymore as much, but
it's like one of the first times I actually enjoyed an Applewhite related storyline.
Yeah, I'm glad we came full circle with like Matt and Danielle. Mm-hmm. I don't know why on earth he's dating her. She seems to be talentless and boring, but
and mean and crazy, like I don't
juvenile,
know.
Juvenile, like that room. Like, if I, like, you walk into that, what the fuck's up with that room?
Yeah, no, it was weird.
Pink everything, it's gross. But I'm gonna let you talk about Susan because I know she's your fave.
Oh my God, my main bitch.
Are you guys ready to cringe?
Yeah, this is like, if you thought that she couldn't get more annoying and brutal, think again, folks. So, Susan and Dr. Ron have been, I guess, going on some dates, and she tries to get him to, like, come inside. And she, like, hints at it super obviously, and he kind of keeps, like, lightly, like, gently, like, saying no, basically. And she's like, okay, so, like, what's your problem here? Like, I'm trying to get you to come inside, like.
Yeah, she's like, why don't you want to fuck me,
yeah, basically. Yeah, and he's like, well, basically, it's, like, the doctor-patient relationship, like, thing. And I'm like, okay, but, like, you're dating her, like,
what's the difference between like going out on dates with her and like becoming involved in romance? Like, I don't know that like having sex complicates it more than already just hanging out and like going out on a date.
Mm-hmm. Super weird. So basically she's like, she asks him if the relationship's gonna work, and he tells her that he is really attracted to her, but he just like feels like they need to take it slow. So they end up kissing, and then the next day, or, like, whatever day, I don't know. The timeline on the show, I can't really follow. But I just, like, am picturing them fucking and then showing up at the hospital together for her checkup.
They show up in the same car. And yeah. He's like, are you ready for your appointment?
Walk of shame to her doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
So, basically, he tells her that she needs to have a splenectomy because she has a wandering spleen. And he then follows up with the fact that he's going to be the surgeon. So, like, he kind of, like, steps out, and a nurse, this, like,
she says, congratulations. She's like, congrats. And she's like, why are you congratulating?
Yeah, and Susan's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, oh, this is, like, his first. I'm assuming it's just his first splenectomy. They didn't make it super clear if it was, like, his first surgery or not. But I'm assuming it's just the first of this kind. I don't know.
I hope so.
I couldn't really tell.
We were wondering. We weren't quite sure, but
yeah. So let us know. Let us know in the comments.
If you guys have a take on that, we are 100% not sure what his surgical background is.
Well, because I feel like if it's his first splenectomy, that's, like, not a big deal. If it's his first, like, surgery, I'd be like, yeah, that's a bit wild. But yeah. I don't think they even just throw you in to do surgery alone for the first time. I don't even think it works like that.
On Mysterio Lane, they might. I don't know.
Well, they also don't know how health insurance or health care works, so makes sense. She basically thinks that she'll be more comfortable with a different surgeon, and, like, she kind of also gets panicky that it'll be the first time he sees her naked. I'm like, priorities. Like, priorities, Susan.
She's like, first time you're doing this surgery, that's okay. But first time seeing me naked while you're cutting me open, yeah. Not okay.
I know. So she tells her how she's, like, they end up going out to dinner. And she starts
cutting the meat like an animal.
Yeah.
I have to know.
Aggressively. And or not out to dinner, they're just, like, eating. I think it's at her house, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And so he, like, gets his feelings hurt, and she, like, makes a comment about the way that he's cutting his steak, and he's like, well, it's so dry, and he, like, typical man, like, can't take a fucking, like, criticism without getting aggressive.
Also, just Susan can't cook still.
Oh, yeah, she still can't cook. The next day, she basically tells, like, she shows up at the hospital, and she's been waiting for a long time. And she tells him that she goes on this, like, speech, like, typical Susan, like, neurotic-ass speech about how she's not going to, like, compromise herself.
Yeah, she snapped at him.
Yeah, and he like, is quiet at first, and then he's like, no, you're completely right. And he's like, and how long have you been waiting here? And she's like, a few hours. He's like, oh, well, like, 2 hours ago, an apology note and flowers and, like, wine showed up at your house. And he's like, this is why, like, I didn't think that it would work, like, me being your doctor. So they agree that, a different doctor is going to do her surgery. And that's that on that. Like, that was pretty much her story. Yeah. We see her at the end with Bree's poker night. But, yeah,
I don't know why. I feel like it's in left field that she's, like, dating this surgeon, TBH. Like, I don't really like him. He's not personable or charismatic.
Mm-mm. No.
And, like, they seem, like, way too invested for, like, having gone on 4 dates or whatever.
Yeah.
To be having an argument like this. Mm-hmm. And also, like, why is he doing your surgery if you're dating? Like, there's so many whats.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Like, this is where I feel like the writers didn't research, like, the logistics of how this would even happen in real life. And it just feels so, like, I don't know. And it's just boring. I'm like, compared to Bree's storyline, like, this is literally nothing.
Super boring. I still can't believe this guy is dating her after she lied about, like, her fucking...
She's just so manic.
Symptoms. Like, yeah. I can't... It just seems unreal to me.
Yeah.
But somebody a little bit more exciting is Gabby, and you'll never guess, but Sister Mary Bernard is back, baby.
After a really random episode last week for Gabby and Carlos, they're like, okay, let's circle back to what we were doing.
Yeah, the episode last week is like, there's revenge porn of me on the internet. Like, can you get it off? And now it's like, Sister Mary Bernard, Carlos wants to fuck her. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, it starts at the church, because I guess they're still doing this church shit. So there's a baby, and Gabby is, like, ogling it, and Carlos is like, that baby's pretty cute, right? And I guess we find out that Carlos has been pressuring her, like, nonstop to have another baby, like, right after her miscarriage, which, like, read a fucking room, Carlos.
Yeah.
Just read it. Yeah. Like, learn to read. And Carlos is like, when are you going to be ready for another baby? And Gabby is like, can we just fucking ignore? I enjoy that our marriage is back on track right now.
Yeah.
And then at that church mass or whatever, they announced that Sister Mary is back. And Gabby is like, son of a bitch.
In the middle of church, yeah.
Yeah. So... then we see that Sister Mary Bernard is doing house calls to Carlos, which I'll never find not weird. Like, she's literally, like, pulling up in a car, and, like, Carlos is getting in.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes up excuses why she can't come in, and she's like, I know it's because Gabby hates me. Carlos says that, no, Gabby is just jealous of you. And I'm like, ew, that's okay, whatever, Carlos.
Why would he tell her that? Like, what the fuck?
Sister Mary Bernard makes a big leap, and she's like, I saw you at church, and I could see that you're unhappy. And I just want to talk to you, and that's why I'm, like, rolling up to your house right now, I guess. And he's like, I'm not feeling too good, and it's about, like, having kids. I'm, like, down that we had a miscarriage, and, like, Gabby's not ready right now. I want them so bad. Mm-hmm. And Sister Mary's, like, she refuses to give them to you, and I'm like, I don't really think that's what it is. I think she's just, like, had a fucking miscarriage. Can everybody chill? Like,
yeah.
So... and Carlos kind of says that, too. He's like, I mean, I kind of get it. And she's like, what if she refuses to have kids, like, after this? And this is just a tactic. And he's like, I guess I'm screwed then. And she's like, you're right. You're screwed unless. And she, like, hands him a little pamphlet about annulment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking Jordan, I was like, why do they keep pushing annulment? Because, like, these people have been married for a long time, and it, like, wouldn't it be divorce? But I guess annulment, she explained to me, is that it's when you haven't consummated the marriage.
Yeah, so technically you could get away with an annulment if there's no proof that you've consummated your marriage. So without a child, you can get away with it. And then, of course, they're Catholic, so their divorce is not a thing.
Yeah, so next thing we know, Carlos finds Gabby chilling really hardcore, reading a magazine, and he brings up the baby again. And he's like, however long it takes you for you to feel ready, I'm fine with. I just need to know that this isn't a maybe. I like want a promise that you're gonna bear children for me, which I think is so antiquated and like Carlos could just fucking chill. And she's like, I can't promise that. He's like, why not? And she's like, I can't promise that I'm going to wake up tomorrow and do something I didn't think I'd do my entire life. Like, remember you fucking messed with my birth control pills. Like, that's why I even got pregnant.
Well, when they got married, the agreement was no kids. So it's like, if anything, he's reneging. Yeah.
Yeah, they made a pact. She's like, you're going to just have to accept it. There's not much else you can do.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that's not true. And he throws down that motherfucking pamphlet. And Gabby knows immediately. She's like, Sister Mary Bernard.
Yeah.
Carlos is like, it could all just be over if you make me that promise. And Gabby's like, I can just promise you this fight isn't over.
Mm-hmm.
So Gabby goes to church in a hot outfit looking for Mr. Crowley. He's in the confessional. She goes in and she says that Sister Mary Bernard is fucking men, basically, when mm-hmm. she's a nun. So we all know that's bad. I don't know if she specifically names Carlos, but she's like, yeah, you better look out for her.
Well, she does say that, like,
Carlos confessed everything.
Well, she brings up, like, the moaning and stuff.
Yeah, she says Carlos confessed everything right before he asked for an annulment.
Mm-hmm.
And Father Crowley is like, hell no. And he, like, leaves the confessional. And Gabby, like, wipes her hand. She's like, my work here is done. But then another priest hops in and Gabby's feeling guilty that she just lied in a confessional. So she goes back in. Mm-hmm. She's like, I gotta confess. Then we see Carlos is getting off the phone with Sister Mary. And she's been transferred to Fairbanks, Alaska. So Gabby's plan worked and I love it.
Yeah.
She doesn't know why. The father won't give her a reason. And he's really upset. And then he goes to lie down, which I don't think this is a good sign. If your man is this upset about a chick moving away, like, you should look into that.
Yeah, not a good sign.
Yeah, not good. So Gabby then goes to church in some pink pants, and she's like, she finds Sister Mary scrubbing floors because I guess they're extra trying to punish her before she goes.
Yeah.
And she's like, heard you're being transferred, so I came to say goodbye. And I love this, like, victory gloat. She just literally went there to say, like, bye. Mm-hmm. Bye, bitch. And she's like, we've had our differences, but that doesn't mean I'm happy to see you shipped off to Alaska. And Sister Mary's like, I fucking know you had something to do with this. Gabby is like, wow, like, something about annulment mojo. She's like, you have so much power here, all that annulment mojo.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, whatever, your marriage sucks. Like, this won't get rid of your problems. Carlos will do what he wants. And then Gabby is, like, getting ready to leave, I think. And Mary throws a fucking, like, sponge or brush at her or something. And then Gabby slaps her.
Mm-hmm.
And they get in a brawl, like, at the church. And I was there for it. Then basically a bunch of other sisters come in
mm-hmm.
with kids and like everybody sees this. And then Sister Mary literally bites her.
Yeah.
And they roll on the floor. She pulls hair and the priest breaks it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, Gabby rolls home to Carlos looking wrecked.
Yeah.
And he found out, like, somebody called him and he's like, what were you thinking? And he's like, I got a call for the church. They said you attacked her. Like, what the fuck? She says, I wasn't thinking, you know, I realized the ass I should have been kicking is yours.
Yeah.
She's the bitch who just manipulated you into threatening me. And he's like, I wasn't threatening you. I was asking you for a promise. And she's like, well, till death do us part is a promise. So you should fucking keep that one. But instead, you came home and you threw down and threw around the word annulment. Like, what the hell? And how do you think it makes me feel? And he's like, I need to have a child. And I don't understand this need that he has. But me either. Whatever. And I need to know, like, that I'm the woman you want to spend the rest of your life with, is what she says.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just a uterus and high heels. And he's like, that's not it. And she's like, I'm not going to be blackmailed into giving birth. And I wish you would choose and I wish you would do it so I could move on with my life. Because he asked her to choose. And she's like, of course I choose you. He's like, I think that's the right decision. And she's like, wait, I have the answer to your question earlier. She's like, I want to have a baby. I want to have a baby with you. It was heartwarming, actually.
I actually really liked it. Basically, she just wanted him to prove that, like, he would be with her regardless. And then once he did, it's like, then she's willing to give him what she wants. And I think that was the right way to play it. Because, like, after everything that happened with her miscarriage, she clearly, like, wasn't opposed to having another kid. because she was sad that she lost that child, and it was something she was considering, but I do think she had to know, though, that, like, Carlos wasn't just going to wait, like, only with her because of the having a kid.
Yeah, so it's, like, there were some icky parts to it. Like, I really get irritated when these guys are like, I need a child. I need to reproduce. And he's, like, forcing her, and he black. Like, he did a lot of icky things in the way, but I think the conclusion that she decides on her own terms that she wants to have a baby with him was, like, very heartwarming. And I did get a little... I had a little smile. I did a little moment.
Yeah.
And then we moved on to Lynette, so.
Yeah. So, Lynette and Tom did not have as deep of a storyline as Carlos and Gabby maybe did.
Or a heartwarming. Like, I mean, I guess you could say it was heartwarming at the end, but we'll get there. Not the same feeling.
So Lynette is working on a frozen yogurt campaign, and Tom just, like, starts putting his input in, and... they actually, like, kind of come up with some good ideas, and they work on it together. And then later Lynette tells him that they actually got the account. And he's obviously super excited about it because he was, like, one of the people that came up with it with her, and, like, makes him feel like he's not rusty and, like, he's back in the game. Which I'm pretty sure the reverse happened last season between him and Lynette. So, like, clearly I'm like, they both just want to work. But anyway.
Yeah, it starts, like, when he comes down to, like, help her, when he ends up helping her out, it did start very wholesomely. Like, she's like, work sucks, and it's a late night, and I'm going to be up all night. And he's like, I'll get you some coffee. I thought that was really cute.
Yeah.
I was
like, aw. They were having, like, it was, like, good, like, back and forth. But basically there's, like, a position opening up at Lynette's work. And she asks him if there's anyone to recommend from his old firm for this position. And he's like, well, what about me?
Which was kind of rude, I thought. Like, did Lynette know what she was doing? She's like, anyone at all? Anyone talented? And he's like, I mean, I, like, literally did that job.
Yeah. And Lynette is just like, I mean, and I don't know. Lynette does not react. She laughs at him. Like, she straight up laughs at him when he says.
She's so rude to him.
Yeah. And
she, like, belittles him at every corner, every chance she gets, every turn.
Yeah. So she basically was like, this is a recipe for disaster. Like, this is not going to work. Like, us working together. And, like, what about the kids and all this stuff? Like, we'll have to get a nanny. And, like, Tom's just like, no, like, we'll both be making a lot of money. Like, we can get a nanny. Plus, we have the fucking daycare that you spent a whole episode fighting for. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the fuck she's... like, she's just saying nothing at this point. She doesn't want him to do it, but he decides he's gonna fucking do it. So Tom shows up to interview as Tom Cavos, which I thought was pretty funny.
And he's all, like, an anagram. Isn't it smart?
Like, he really thought he did something.
Yes. Tom Cavos.
So basically, Tom, like, shows up at the interview, and he, like, right off the bat, he and Ed are just, like, getting along, because they start talking about some old campaign Tom did that I guess was legendary. I don't know. You work in marketing. Is this how people are? Like, is this how this happens?
Sometimes they, like, jizz over each other about it. I'm like, whatever, dude. Like,
it's so, like, weird, but
it's super uncomfortable. I don't like doing that.
They're just, like, broing out in this meeting, which honestly is probably Lynette's fucking worst nightmare come to pass. I don't know. So they do the interview, and she decides, like, after the interview and they hit it off, and, like, Ed really wants to hire Tom, Lynette and Tom, like, talk about it at home. And they get to a point where Lynette agrees to it, but she's like, you can never resent me or, like, express your resentment for the promotion debacle at the end of last season. And she's like, and you have to forgive me. And he's like, oh, you're already forgiven. And then they kiss, and they, like, he's like, thanks for the job. I'm like, what? Like, what just happened?
The scene at the table, like, Lynette's on the verge of tears and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, you have to promise, like, we'll never talk about, like, what happened. And, yeah, I was like, if you already forgave her, like, I don't know. I feel like it was strange.
I'm like, you either already forgave her or you did it, because you did throw it in her face last, like, the other day. So, like, I don't know. It's okay if you haven't forgiven her. But I'm like, why are you saying that when that's clearly not true?
Then she's like, here's some dinner. Here's some wine. And I was like, okay, I guess that's that. Like, yeah. So it wasn't as heartwarming. But I'm glad that Tom's back at work, because he needs that in his life.
Yeah, and I do like this, like, setup of, like, I think this is a good setup for future episodes, because they've had a lot of these, like, one-off episodes lately. Like, this whole season, honestly, like, Nina kind of had a story arc, but not really. Like, each episode, it was very episodic. Yeah. Like, Lynette's adventures at work. So I'm hoping, like, that this sets up more, like, of a storyline for them. Because, like, again, everything seems to get solved really fast for her this season, too. Like, the daycare thing, this, like, last episode, I don't know, like...
I think she's had some fun ones. Like, I think everyone can resonate with, like, a boss from hell. And I think Nina served that. Like, if I were, knock on wood, ever in my future to have a boss that was miserable to me, like... I'd be like, oh my God, like Nina from Desperate Housewives. Like, I'd probably remember like her 8 episodes or whatever, even though they were episodic. Like, there was no real through line. But I'm hoping there's a more ingrained, like, storyline coming our way. But I'm not really sure. Yeah. I just hope that one day Tom and Lynette just own a marketing agency and, like, chill for the rest of their lives.
Oh,
like,
my God. You have no idea what's... I'm so excited for you.
I don't know, so let's see what happens. But that's my dream for them. So we'll see. Yeah. But at the end, Mary Alice Young comes in. She says, everyone understands the nature of war. We also understand that victory depends on the cards we're dealt. Some understand when we're faced with a bloody battle to simply give in. But for some, surrender is unacceptable, even though they know it will be a fight to the death. That leads us to our favorite part of the day, our fuck, marry, kill.
Oh, yeah. Best part.
Yes, yes, yes.
Man, I don't know. I said that like I had one off the top of my head.
I know. I'm like, now that I think about it, there's like several key players, but I think I know my kill.
Okay.
It was between two people, but I have to kill Danielle. I just hate her. I think she's so fucking annoying.
I'm gonna have to agree with you on that, because she's literally like ruining possibly her family's lives, willy-nilly throwing secrets around.
It was between her and Dr. Ron, but I'm like, oh God, I have to go with Danielle.
Yeah.
Fuck, I felt like not a ton of people were fuckable this episode. I will have to go... Dang. I'm going to have to go with Matt.
Okay.
Because he is pretty attractive. I like that he used Danielle because she was my kill. I like that he literally just took that information and was like, yo, Betty, guess what? And I think that he would be good in bed. I do have mentioned that I think he's hot. If my mom walked in, he would hide super fast. So that's my reasoning for Matt.
That was pretty good skills, getting under the bed that quick.
He got under the bed so fast, and I'm surprised he fit. He's a big dude.
Yeah, I know. That was impressive.
Good skills there. He'd be a great fuck. To marry, I'm going to have to marry Tom, because I think Tom Cavos is hilarious. I like that he... was so like about it too. Like, he's like an anagram, wasn't it smart? It was hilarious to me. And I like his dedication to getting this job, even though his wife was rude as fuck to him about it multiple times. And he secured the job and he would provide for our family. So
great points all around.
Yeah.
I would marry Gabby, because her scrappy behavior this episode was like, yeah, I want that on my team.
She's from the streets.
Yeah. And then I'd probably fuck Tom for the same reasons you just listed.
Oh, okay.
Because I actually did like him this episode and how he handled everything. But I do think I would prefer being married to Gabby, just because I need someone to fight for me like that.
Yeah. And then at the end, have a very heartwarming discussion about babies.
Yeah. I like that.
Who's your kill? Oh, you agreed to kill Danielle.
Yeah, I would kill Danielle as well.
So Danielle is double dead.
Yeah, easy kill.
Yes. How about our housewife of the week? What you thinking?
I'm thinking Gabby.
I'm thinking Gabby too. Mm-hmm. You already knew it was on my fucking mind.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like she did the most, like... She did the most. Like, I don't know. She fights for what she wants.
She beat a bitch. She beat a nun in church in front of other nuns and children.
Yeah,
and
no shame.
She took... hair pulling, she took getting bitten, all to prove that like Carlos is her man and she's not gonna get her marriage annulled by some bitch. So,
and I liked
shout
like
out Gabby,
and I liked her kind of realization that like she actually should be mad at Carlos at the end too. Like, I don't know, it was like good character moment for her, a lot of growth.
Yeah, I'm feeling Gabby a lot lately.
Me too. So
she's risen in the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
She gets our housewife of the week fairly frequently, and I love it.
She does. We'll have to like look back and see how many times
I know she's gotten a lot of them, but go, Gabby, go. Like, yeah. She didn't even manipulate. She just threw down.
Mm-hmm.
She showed her true feelings and took one for the team. And that leads us to our Apple rating.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm ready.
I think I'm ready too.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
3.75.
Whoa, okay.
Okay.
In the threes for you.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. 3.75 is not like a bad score out of five.
No.
I liked it, but there, like, two of the storylines to me were really good, and two of them were kind of weak. So.
True. I underestimated how horrible Susan's was.
Susan's was truly bafflingly stupid. Like, Lynette and Tom's wasn't as serious, and I don't necessarily think it was bad per se. It just wasn't on the level of like Brie and like Gabby's to me.
Yeah, so I felt like Brie and Gabby had such a strong storyline. It was mm-hmm. heartfelt. It made me feel things.
Yeah.
I did like Tom and Lynette because I did also feel things, just not to the degree of Carlos and Gabby. I liked that Tom was like fighting so hard. I liked that Lynette had this like underlying guilt that she was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I thought it was strong. Not the strongest, but
mm-hmm.
I thought those two were good. I liked Brie and the Apple Whites. I thought that was a smart, like, weaving together
mm-hmm.
of two worlds through teenagers we don't quite care about that much.
But they, like, they made me care more, I guess, about the mystery this episode,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, so that's what it did for me, but I had to mark it down because Susan sucks, per usual.
Her storyline is such so throwaway. Yeah. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, no Paul Zach movement. No nothing there. Like, no Mike. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Dr. Ron, I hate Dr. Ron. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really where my 0.75 is missing. Like,
yeah.
But I thought the theme of war was, like, well done and subtle. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I
would
I do
say
too.
That. But, yeah, okay. So, not bad. Not
yeah.
Bad
no, not a bad episode. I just, it wasn't top tier for me. I'm getting a little stricter the further we get along, I guess.
I know. I feel like I need to, like, you know, really bear down with my rating because I feel like I'm throwing out lots of fours and then maybe they're not deserving them.
I mean, it's you can only rank it based on what you know, too. And it's like, I know that there's better episodes coming, I guess. So I'm trying to, like,
that's
remember
the thing.
That.
I don't know what's coming my way. So mm-hmm. every episode, I'm like, this could be the best. This could be it. Like,
yeah. It's like gaslighting you into thinking this is like a top tier episode.
It is. I've forgotten everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we hope you enjoyed that episode. Per usual, you can find us on social media, on Instagram, at DesperatePod. Mm-hmm. Same with Twitter, DesperatePod@gmail.com if you want to shoot us an email and connect.
Yeah.
And we're here every Monday. We try to drop. We usually let you know if we're running late or anything mm-hmm. like that. And we love to hear from you guys. We just got a little message on Instagram from a new fan that we're so appreciative. Thank you for reaching out. We
absolutely
haven't heard back, but we asked, we're like, is there anything you'd like us to improve on? Like, what do you like? What do you not like?
We're calling you out on the podcast now,
but
so respond.
We're looking forward to what you have to say. So we're glad to hear good things. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to us on Spotify. Give us a follow.
Yeah.
Whatever floats your boat. But next week, we're going to be recapping season 2, episode 14.
Mm-hmm.
Over that halfway mark now. So hopefully it's only uphill from here.
Yeah.
So
hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. But before you go, we're going to give you our words of wisdom to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.